I had one goal when I got to the camp. I thought, I'm 15, I can't die at 15.
People weren't initially aware of the racial nature of the deportations. It took some time for people to truly realize what happened during the Holocaust.
What mattered was the resistance fighters who'd been deported. As for the Jewish people who'd been sent away, there was this suspicion. What did they do to manage to get back?
She said to me, "Promise me, if you get a chance to go back, tell them what happened to us. Tell them what people are capable of doing to each other."
On January 27, 1945, when the Soviet army liberated Auschwitz, the French population had yet to grasp the reality of the Holocaust. It was not until the Allied advance on the Western Front that the general public understood the scale of the tragedy.
The Americans were the first to enter a commando camp near Buchenwald called Ordruf. They decided to leave a circle of corpses as they found them and not to touch anything in the camp. And then they quickly organized a real media operation. General Bradley and General Eisenhower's visit was filmed by news crews. There were photographers. So it was a considerable media moment.
Les fours crématoires brûlant jour et nuit ne pouvaient pas suffire au rythme de la mort.
Harrowing images compounded by the astonishing moment when the survivors began to return. Esther Zick was one of them. She grew up in Paris, where her parents, who were Polish Jews, were rounded up with her younger brother in July 1942.
These are my parents.
Esther was deported to Auschwitz in September 1943. There, she was reunited with her sister, who disappeared months earlier.
Every morning, I went to see her in her section, and every day I saw her withering away. And one day I turned up and she wasn't there anymore. So I asked the other woman, I said, "Where's my sister?" They said she couldn't get up, so she was sent to the sick bay. We knew what that meant. I rushed there and found my sister lying on a straw mattress, spitting up blood all over the place. She'd been bitten by dogs and had an infection that had spread. She was in a pitiful state. So I said to her, "Listen, Fanny, I'm going to help you up, because you know what's going to happen if you stay here." She said, "No, no, leave me alone. This is the end for me." She said, "I've tried to hold on." And then she said, "You're young. The war will soon be over." She said to me, "Promise me, if you get a chance to go back, tell them what happened to us. Tell them what people are capable of doing to each other, so that we're not forgotten by history."
Esther survived alongside her friend Marie. The two young women were in Auschwitz until January 17, 1945. When the Soviet army began to advance on their positions, the Nazis evacuated tens of thousands of detainees from Poland via death marches to Bergen-Belsen and then to the Mauthausen camp.
We stayed like that until May 5, 1945. At 1 p.m. we saw the white flag flying above the Mauthausen fortress because it was on a hill. And then we saw the first deportees coming down. Then they came running, saying, "Don't stay in the camp. The Germans have opened the gates, saying they're going to lay landmines in the camp." They couldn't leave any survivors. One of the ladies who was with us said, "If we go out, they'll shoot us." I said, "If we stay inside, they're going to shoot us anyway." So I thought, well, what are we risking? So Marie and I set off.
The two young women reached a deserted military hospital. 3 days later, Germany had surrendered, and an American regiment arrived on the scene.
They disinfected us and gave us a shower. Then they weighed us. I weighed just 32 kilos, so it was certainly time for that to come to an end. And then they gave us a more thorough examination, and we'd caught typhus because the two barracks were in the old infirmary.
As the war in Europe drew to a close, the Allies faced a huge logistical challenge in organizing the return of those who'd been deported and detained.
People were repatriated in different ways. Some went through Northern Europe to return to France. Others arrived directly by train in Paris. While others had to be repatriated by plane because of the state of their health, it meant that they couldn't walk, for example.
We could barely stand up, but we were finally cured. They took us to a small airfield, and we flew back to France in an American Flying Fortress bomber. It was just the two of us. It was my first trip on a plane. We arrived at Villacoublay Airport, and from there a coach was waiting to take us to the Lutetia Hotel.
The luxury hotel had been the Parisian headquarters of German military intelligence during the occupation. But on April 29, 1945, it was requisitioned by the French authorities and used to shelter those returning from the camps.
So we went into the hotel. We were issued temporary identity cards. Next door, there was a small office, the military security, because you had a lot of people who had collaborated. When Paris was liberated, of course, they left with the Germans and then tried to be repatriated, as if they'd been deportees. For us, it was a quick process because Auschwitz was the only camp where they tattooed inmates, so the police check was quick.
Then there were also these famous signs that started appearing in the streets where they would put photos of the people who'd returned or their names, and the families came to see if their loved ones were among them. People had to wait for a very long time before they could be sure that their family members were dead.
If someone came to pick you up, they didn't ask if it was family or friends or acquaintances. It could be anyone. Then Marie arrived with her fiancé, as she had told me she would. So I was accompanied by two adults. I had come to the office to collect the money that was supposed to be given to us, and then I left.
Les prisonniers reviennent chaque jour par milliers. Pour eux, le cauchemar est fini.
As France began to rebuild, resistance fighters and prisoners of war were celebrated as heroes. Those deported because they were Jewish were virtually invisible.
They were a minority compared to a large category that the Ministry of Refugees and Deported Prisoners referred to as absentees. Who were the absentees? There were over a million prisoners of war and around 750,000 STOs, or forced workers. And if we consider all the Jewish deportees who are still alive, it's maybe 40, 50,000. So it's a small minority. And when you look at the news footage of the time, the emphasis was often on prisoners of war, and in particular, everything that was done to celebrate the repatriation of the millionth prisoner of war.
Le merci du peuple de France aux alliés que crie avec sa joie la foule qui acclame Jules Caron.
Esther returned to Belleville, the neighborhood of her childhood, in an attempt to track down other survivors. But the welcome was not particularly warm.
There was a small crowd of people who came up to us and said, "What happened to you? Tell us." We started to talk with Marie, and then we saw this little group starting to get agitated. They started to say, "You've gone crazy. You're talking nonsense. That couldn't possibly happen. How can you spread such ideas?" Then a gentleman looked at me and said, "There were so few of you who came back. What did you do to come back and not the others?"
For Jewish deportees, there was a certain level of suspicion that didn't exist for resistance deportees. Why did they come back? What did they do to get back? It took a while for that mentality to change, even among Jews. The trial of Adolf Eichmann in 1961 was important for that, for people to want to hear the stories of those who were in the ghettos or camps and who survived.
At first, there were many editors who were interested in publishing the first accounts. And then it slowed down a bit, because after a while that didn't sell, because people didn't want to read such frank testimonies.
The first organizations for those who'd been deported began to lay the foundations for this remembrance work, supported by the new French administration.
France kept all the archives of the Vichy government, and the Jewish dossiers used to arrest people were in fact reused on their return as a file that was transformed into a sort of civil status document.
In addition to preserving these archives, France made important legislative changes too.
The new French government had promised to abolish all racial laws, meaning that when those Jews returned, there was no longer any discrimination. The decision was made that any Jew who'd been deported from France would have the right to return to France, even if they didn't have their papers. Because nobody had papers anymore, right?
Esther, whose parents had been refused naturalization in 1934, became French. But part of her remained where most of her family had been murdered.
Once you've been to Auschwitz, you never leave. When I was there, I did everything I could not to die. When I came back, well, I swallowed a whole box of pills, everything I had, and ended up in a hospital. I was in the hospital for 6 months. Then when I came out, of course, my hair had grown back. I mean, I looked normal, if you like. Then I started to feel like me again. In 1948, I had just turned 20. On my first holiday, we were on the beach. There were lots of young people. I had a number tattooed on my arm, so I'd wear a scarf or something to cover it up. And then I met a young man amongst a group of young people, and we started seeing each other and ended up getting married. I had three children, six grandchildren, and six great-grandchildren.
Like many of the survivors, Esther still tells her story tirelessly at 97 years old, keeping the promise she made to her sister all those years ago.